League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today is Wednesday, January 31st. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. Please listen to us any way you get your podcast. Like, subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Give us a like. Give us a share. Talk to us. We want to talk to you. We got a lot going on. Give us a listen. We're going to talk about the world of sports tonight. We're going to start with the NFL. And then there were two, boys. Just like that, the NFL season is over. It's unbelievable how fast this thing moves. All that's left is a Vegas Super Bowl with the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. We all like the 49ers to get their preseason, by the way. I won't take any bows yet, but we all had the 49ers getting the Super Bowl. We're going to start off with the Kansas City game. They wind up beating Baltimore 17-10. That's right. Kansas City knocks off the number one seed to get back to the Super Bowl for the fourth time in 5 years. They're going to be trying for back-to-back titles for the first time in the NFL in 19 years. Last one to do it was New England. KC had some long drives. They jumped out to a 7-0 lead at the 7:46 mark after deferring the kickoff and holding Baltimore to three it out. They then went 10 plays, 86 yards. And with that score, they basically took the air out of the stadium. Darren, talk to me.
So this the first drive of the game, they kind of just – it was an amazing catch by Kelce on a crucial play. It seemed like Mahomes was scrambling for like 8, 9, 10 seconds. And first they converted a 4th and 2 to keep the drive going. Then they had another play where Kelce made an amazing catch. Kev?
This is going to be a big topic throughout the day. What do you think of the 4th and 2 at the 41?
Like the call on it, because at the time it was beyond field goal range. And I'm saying to myself, you know what? They were moving the ball pretty well. So I didn't have a real major problem with the way that they did that.
You're an opponent's side of the field. It's not field goal range. 4th and 2 is short enough. And, you know, even if you punt it, if it's in the end zone, it's a 20-yard net.
Exactly. I thought it was the right call.
Kev, and it's early in the game.
Yep.
we gotta put that out there because we're going to have some stuff to talk about later. Go ahead, Darren.
Yes, no doubt. So the
4th and 2 play to Kelce was great, but the touchdown was a perfect pass and catch because Hamilton's coverage was about as good as it could be. Mahomes put it where he had to put it. Kelce held on to it the way he had to hold on to it. Nothing really the Ravens can do on that. It was just one of those moments where the quarterback made the right play, the receiver made the right play. Same kind of play happened the week before to the Chiefs when Shakur made the catch in the corner that Josh Allen threw. So it was very similar of where that ball was placed and how the defender didn't have much of a shot. But the Chiefs came down the field and scored, jumped out 7-0.
All right, Baltimore follows that with a touchdown.
I got a point on that. How the hell is that not intentional grounding? That ball was 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. He scrambled back to the 3, threw it out of bounds, never reached the line of scrimmage. I'm hearing all these complaints about all the penalties Baltimore got called on him. They got away with a murder in that game. I'm sorry. That pass was 5 yards behind the line. He should have been at the 3. Kev?
And none of those penalties were wrong.
They weren't debatable. They weren't even debatable, the penalties. But, I mean, I'm here, oh, is the refs – listen, don't get me wrong. The Chiefs get a favorable whistle in a lot of situations, i.e. the Jets game. But, wow, they also went for a 4th down in their own end on that drive, the Ravens, and they got it. They converted a 4th down from their own – what was it, 31?
34. Like
it was 34.
I think it was 34. But, you know, it was a 4th and 1 play, and knowing Baltimore and the way they can run the ball, I don't love going for it there, but knowing Baltimore's strength in offense is running the ball. Kansas City, not the strongest run defense. Not a bad decision there.
Yeah, one of the interesting things in that game, in this game, on that drive, I should say, was Jackson. He makes the quarterback scramble, and it looks like he could break it. And then all of a sudden, it looks like he just kind of slows down the stiff arm, like he didn't want to try to outrun the defense. It was a theme for the entire game. You watched a 17-10 game on the night where the Chiefs didn't score a point in the second half, and you don't leave that game thinking that Mahomes didn't play well. I thought Mahomes played, but you leave the game questioning Jackson. You leave the game questioning Jackson's decision making all day long. It was a one touchdown game. One quarterback looks like he's brilliant. The other quarterback looks like he didn't know what he was doing. That was the way I took it, Kev.
Overall, I mean, you go back. Mahomes has been 6 or 7 games now in a row where he has not thrown an interception in the playoffs. He's taken, I think the stat was 5 sacks in the last 6 playoff games. So he doesn't turn the ball over, doesn't take sacks, no negative plays. That's what you do to give yourself a chance to win the playoffs.
And yeah, he completed 11 out of 11 to Kelce. He completed 8 out of 9 to Rice and 4 out of 4 to Pacheco. So, I mean, the guy, I mean, he was 30 for 39 overall, so he was very effective. But the guy hit his guys, and they made plays. It was really cool. But Baltimore, like you said, G, they run down the field. They get that touchdown on the blown coverage. Well, basically had Bolton, the linebacker, covering Zay Flowers. They couldn't get to him. He had way too long. Hit him with the bomb. G.
So, you know, a big part of what we're going to talk about is the fact that Lamar had 8 rushes for 54 yards, and the rest of the Baltimore only ran the ball 8 other times. I mean, it's unbelievable. This is a team that runs the ball all the time. I don't understand. It's not like this was they were down 30 that all I want to do is run pass plays. They got away from looking at this, I thought they got away from everything they do on a normal basis.
This is the number one rushing offense in the NFL.
Yeah.
And like you said, especially, you know, Edwards and Hill, the two running backs combined for 6 carries. Edwards had, you know, an early 15-yarder, and it was like he was never used again.
Yeah.
And Justice Hill on screen passes made a couple people miss. I mean, they were just swing passes, but he was getting 10 yards. He's that quick. Stunning to me how they run the ball 6 times, and out of the 8 runs, G, 2 to a wide receiver. I know Zay Flowers is quick, but come on. Gus Edwards has to be pounding the ball in.
Terrible.
And that exact point about them not running the ball shows up in the time of possession. Because the time of possession is 37 minutes to Kansas City and 22 to Baltimore. Baltimore had 3 turnovers in the game. Let's get to a disastrous two plays in a span of 2 minutes, which was Zay Flowers. In the third quarter, it's a 54-yard catch, gets him down to the Kansas City 10. But then he gets up, he taunts Snead. It cost him 15 yards. And then 4 plays later, he gets caught trying to extend the football into the end zone. And they get nothing. I mean, it's 2 disastrous plays in the span of 4 minutes by one guy. I mean, it was horrible. And again, though, we keep saying this all the time. All these players, one, stop trying to extend the damn ball. Just go down. If you're down on the 2, you're down on the 2. It's first and goal at the 2 damn yard line. Why we got to extend the ball to try to get in? You don't need to try to get in.
And the taunt on Flowers wasn't really marginal. He shoved them.
Oh, no. Not at all.
He stole the ball by his head. And then he said something. Now, I don't know what he said. It might have been, hey, nice try. Who the hell knows? We can't see that part. But he did 3 things that seemed egregious. Before we jump into that, and I'll let you cut on that, in the second quarter, the Chiefs come back down. They go up 14-7, go 4-for-4 on third down, and then nobody really scored after that. Chiefs force a fumble on the next drive. Jackson coughs it up with the sack. Amenahu gets hurt right after that, so he doesn't play the rest of the game. And the Chiefs then get stopped on a 4th and 1. What was it, like the 14 or so,
at
like
the
that?
13, Kev? Yep.
13. Yeah. So, what'd you think of that? Were you good with them going for it up 14-7?
I think when you're 14-7, you've got a chance for free points there because you've gotten the turnover there. I take the 3 points. I go up 17-7 there. Because your defense is playing so well, I go up two scores there.
I was surprised they didn't challenge the Kelce spot. Even though I think he was short, I would have challenged it to give me a little more time to think about it. Because I thought it was close enough to challenge on the tackle on that play. And then when it was a full yard, I was like, you know, I was a little gun-shy on it as well.
Now, as a Chiefs fan, you've seen it all year. Don't you feel more confident with them at 4th-and-2 or 4th-and-3 rather than going for 4th-and-1 because they always seem to get stuffed? Is it because Mahomes never runs a sneak?
Well, he doesn't. He got hurt that one year, and I don't think they've run a sneak since. He still scrambles, but he hasn't run a pure sneak because he got hurt on the sneak. And, they won't do it. So when they run a sneak, this team, Kelce or Bell get behind center. Both were college quarterbacks, and they run the sneak. That's the way this team kind of executes it. They do not, sit there and have Patrick go forward because he got stepped on once and they're never going to let it happen again. But, yeah, I didn't have a huge problem with them going for it, but I would have rather taken the 3 at that time. I just thought you get the points because you got the turnover, so you got to make them pay with the turnover. That was just my take on it. But then they go punt, 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 and the Chiefs get the 2 personal foul calls and give them the field goal. So first you get the clothesline. Well, you get the headbutt by Van Noy.
Yeah, right? I mean, you've gone backed up at the 11-yard line. Chiefs, first down, they hand off to Pacheco for 1. So you know the Chiefs are just looking to kill the half. And Kelce and Queen were going at it. I think that was going on all game. And Van Noy comes in and headbutts him right in front of the referee. What do you expect is going to happen?
He's not a veteran. I mean, Van Noy's been around forever. He's been around forever. Belichick. He's been on these teams that had discipline. He comes in and headbutts, and then the clothesline. Mahomes is going to throw. He's trying to knock down the pass, but he clotheslined him. They basically gave the Chiefs that field goal.
Yeah, to me, the Van Noy was just stupid because that's after the fact. The penalty on Jones. At least it's rough in the passer, no doubt about it. But at least he's trying to make a football player. He's engaged with the lineman. He's swinging the arm, trying to make trying to block the pass. It's in the process of trying to make a football play. It's still rough in the passer, but it's not a stupid penalty like Van Noy's was.
No, the guy's reaching, trying to knock down a pass, and he ended up taking his neck off.
Right in the head, right in the face mask.
So that makes it 17-7, and then we don't see points again for a long time, G.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
And you talked about the fumble inside the end. It was a great play by Snead. He reached across, and he knocked it out. I thought he was in live when I watched it. I'm like, oh, he had to be in. And then they showed a replay, and the ball was clearly knocked out inside the one. So it was like, wow. It was a great play.
Then you want to talk about penalties and the Chiefs. All the Chiefs get every break. They get down 2nd and 5 at the 32. Mahomes scrambles for a first down. That gets called back because of the Smith hold. Very next play was a swing pass to Rice. Then he brought 33 yards for a touchdown. Brought back again because of another back-to-back on Smith. And my wife was watching the game. She's looking at the replay going, where's the hold?
Basically, it was a screen. So they were trying to let him through. And, he might have had his arm wrapped.
The referee's got to see that, the arm wrap, and call it.
Yeah. He didn't hold, but he did wrap his arm around the neck, and that's where you're getting the call from.
Right. But that to me is the counterpoint to all the fans arguing that the Chiefs get every call. But the bigger play there is, now you're setting up 3rd and 24, just a nice little dump off 9 yards to Kelce to get them back into field goal range, at least Savage getting 3 before the end of the half.
Yep, absolutely. It gave them the 52-yard field goal, and Butker – like Tucker, isn't going to miss. And we had the pregame with Tucker and Kelce and Mahomes and all this other stuff. And Arthur Millette, who came in and threw a punch at a couple of Chiefs. Interesting game before it started, so to speak. And as Jet fans, we know Arthur Millette as, a below-average nice cornerback. Player. But now he plays.
Yeah.
He's a good fourth corner, but he starts on Baltimore. He's the number one defense, so maybe we were just wrong about him. Anyway, G, sorry.
It's all right. I thought Harbaugh had a bad game. I didn't like the game plan. I just felt like Baltimore came out and wasn't ready to play. And maybe that's because they took the gut punch early from a touchdown from Kansas City and the crowd kind of got out of it. But I don't know. What do you guys think? You guys think that?
I felt like I was watching a Jet game. The undisciplined personal fouls on this
very
game.
Very undisciplined.
Even remind me like I was watching the Jets. And I'm not trying to be funny with that. But yeah. It's just something. And not even this many. Usually the Jets two or three. This was five. I mean, the last one with Roquan was, you know, I don't even know what he was thinking there. You know, giving him a first down as you're trying to get the ball back. But so many silly things.
It was actually smart to restart the first down thing there.
It was to an extent, but not
the. But you're not expecting. You're expecting him to get the 5 yard offside.
Yeah, not 15. You don't give him the extra 10 yards
because
you're trying to get the ball back in better field position. You know.
I don't think it was so much Harbaugh's decision making them coming out flat. I mean, surprisingly, neither defense came out strong. I mean, for them after the three and out to go touchdown, 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 and then Kansas City's defense steps up, finally makes a play on the strip sack. Baltimore's defense then steps up and stuffs Pacheco, and the combination of those two just seems to turn the tide where the defense all of a sudden realized, oh, shit, we need to be stepping up here and play. And once you had those two things, the strip sack and the stuff, that was the end of the scoring. We had two field goals or 10 points the rest of the game.
One thing the Chiefs do really well is they adjust in the second half. Their defense has been lights out second half all year long. Obviously the first two playoff games as well, obviously Miami and Buffalo didn't do anything in the second half either. But most of the season it's been this way. The thing that Spags does a good job of getting those guys, getting those adjustments in, so to speak. And it really worked out for them. At no point watching this game, and I do agree with you, Gino, on the game plan, because I heard about Monken. I've heard about Monken all season. But again, the six carries is an issue for me. You have but you have Justice Hill and you have Gus Edwards and you have Naughty out of the game who didn't play. You have Gay not starting, even though Tranquil played fantastic. And Drew Tranquil was all over the field. He played fantastic back in the game, but Gay, who's faster, wasn't in the game. And then they lose Amenahu. So now all of a sudden, and you got Chris Jones, who's, you know, getting older, and they don't have the depth on the line anymore. And now all of a sudden, you're not even trying to wear them down. Pacheco did not have a huge game, but he still had 24 carries. He didn't even get 3 yards a pop, but they just kept giving it to him.
Keeps it going. Yep.
I mean, I thought Andy's game plan in the second half was a little off because they ran on first down 6 out of 7 drives. Can't do that. Because the reason they scored was they threw on the first three plays of the game. They had Baltimore off balance. Then all of a sudden you become predictable with the handoff. It was almost like, and I felt this watching it, you might have felt differently. I never felt the Chiefs were in any jeopardy of losing this game. At 17-7, I never thought, even when Baltimore fumbled inside the one, I never thought Baltimore was going to win this game. I thought that the Chiefs were going to, Mahomes would just come down the field and score if he needed to. It's the way I felt about it because Baltimore gave me no confidence. They throw the pick later on. He throws into triple coverage after the 39-yard pass to Aguilar, which was actually a really nice play. Then he throws an incompletion, then a pick. I mean, I just never felt like Lamar Jackson was in the game. G?
And listen, I agree with you. And when you get to 17-7 at the half, I couldn't imagine at that point that Kansas City was going to lose. Up 10 going into the third quarter, I just couldn't imagine they were going to lose. And, you know, for Baltimore to come out like the way they did, you know, I mean, Darren, you've been saying this for a good part of the year, the Kansas City defense – has stepped up and is a really good defense. And to see them not like, I felt like they weren't even trying to run the ball. It wasn't that he tried and he abandoned it or he changed it. Like, did they decide at the beginning of the game, we're not running the ball today? I mean,
it was almost like watching Lamar Jackson saying, I'm going to out-duel Mahomes. I'm going to out-duel him. I'm going to out-throw him. I'm not just a running quarterback. I'm as good as Patrick Mahomes. And you know what? He didn't run as much as he should have. There was a sack in the fourth quarter where he scrambled, and then he had so many opportunities to run up and get the first down, and eventually he just got hit for a 4th-and-3, which they converted at their own 18. But he just ran around and, like, almost refused to take the yard. It was 3rd-and-1 to 4th-and-3. He almost, like, refused it. He had 3 or 4 options, and then he just got tackled from the side. And you're like, what? It's almost like Lamar wasn't – he was so wrapped up in beating Mahomes – that he didn't play like Lamar, in my opinion. Lamar has to run the ball. Lamar has to make them miss. The Chiefs don't struggle against the run. The Chiefs struggle against the quarterback run. If you watch them all season, they stop running backs. They do not stop quarterbacks. They just don't. And you even saw it last week. I mean, Cook got off to a good start. Then they held them down against Buffalo. And then it was just Allen runs because they couldn't do anything. Same thing in this one. But they didn't even try to let Gus Edwards, who's a huge back, wear them down. Justice Hill, who's a big player, wear them down. The only receiver you really saw, the Andrews and Likely were non-factors. Only Zay Flowers, who made a touchdown, then made a big catch, then made a taunting blunder, then fumbled. I mean, you know, Odell was useless. He caught the fourth down play. Outside of that, I think it wanted a catch. I mean, these guys didn't even show up.
Odell played?
Exactly. If he didn't catch the fourth down, but trying to brag about himself, you know, you may not have known it.
All right. Any final thoughts on the game before we move on? Anything else? Anything you want to bring up, Darren, Kev?
Well, just a couple of quick things. Like I said, with the 5 out of 6 drives started with the run, and not 6 out of 7. And the only time they threw it was a pass that was behind the line of scrimmage, which Rice fumbled out of bounds, so they lost a yard on it. So they didn't give themselves a chance, the Chiefs, to kind of be explosive enough on offense. And I think if they do that in the Super Bowl, they won't win this game. Just thought it was just a little bit of a poor job by Andy in the second half, just playing a little too conservatively for me.
Okay, I got one last thing, and that is, it's a bad Baltimore loss. We all agree, but you know, the road for them to do this again next year gets remarkably harder with Burrow coming back, with Rodgers coming back, with all these teams seemingly going to be better. This road gets harder, not easier. You know, Harbaugh with the Chargers. I mean, this road gets harder for them. Darren, Cleveland coming back into the fold again.
Well, you get Nick Chubb back. You get Deshaun back. You know, you get everybody back in that division. Pittsburgh gets Arthur Smith as the offensive coordinator. I don't know if that's good or bad. We'll find out. Can't be any worse than that they had. The one play we didn't talk about, the 3rd and 9 play that pretty much ended the game. The bomb to MVS, who's dropped a million passes but had cradled that. What'd you think of the play call on that one, Kev?
Nervous because of that. But, you know, you felt like even if he misses it, you punt it, and Baltimore was not scoring. I fully believe that. So, you know what? You try to ice the game, you catch him. You know, maybe Baltimore is expecting the run. So you catch him off guard, get the ball out there. And, you know, like you said, MVS, you expect him to drop it. The fact that he hung on to it, falling backwards on his back and everything else. Like I said, because you knew you had the punt option after that, if he didn't catch it and Baltimore was not driving the length of the field to tie this game up.
I agree with you on that. I mean, and again, you know, the erratic and undisciplined thing of Baltimore really cost him. But, Gino, your point is well taken. With Burrow back next year, Pittsburgh has never had a losing season under Tomlin. The Browns will be even better, you'd have to imagine. I'm not trying to kill Flacco, but we knew what Flacco was going in. And, you know, with the lead in an offensive line, he's excellent. And when he has to come from behind, and he can sling it a little bit, but he needed the protection that he didn't get. It's going to be a wide-open division. They're not even guaranteed to win the division next year, let alone make the playoffs. Same with the Chiefs. The Raiders get their guys. You know, you can't take these things for granted. The Chargers will be better. You know, so we'll see what happens.
Houston may be better also, by the way.
Oh, Houston will definitely be better. They were a playoff team this year.
Well, let's face it. You know, the Chiefs were lucky to win the division, the fact that nobody else stepped up. You know, it wasn't the Chiefs we've seen the last few years as offensive juggernauts. They won because of the defense. But this felt like the year, you know, after the last, you know, they've made the Super Bowl 4 out of the last 5 now.
Yep.
You felt like this is their weakest offense, the best chance to not have them go to the Super Bowl. I know they missed it 2 years ago, but that's because Burrow, I thought, played great, and that's what it took to beat them, was Burrow playing great.
And coming from behind, too.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't feel like you had to play great to beat the Chiefs this year, but nobody could do it in the playoffs.
Well, listen, we looked early on, and the Jets should have beat them. You know, I mean, we looked at regular things, and we're like, hey, you know, this team is definitely a beatable team. Lost to the Raiders. Lost to the Broncos convincingly. You know, this was not your typical Chief team. So you're 100% right. So last question before we go to the next game. Are you guys tired? I'm a Chief fan, but are you guys tired of the Chiefs? Have you had enough?
No. Getting there, but not quite yet.
Because it's not at the Patriot level yet?
No.
I agree with Kev. Not quite yet.
Okay. Maybe one more, and it'll be annoying after this one. If they win it, even if they lose it.
You know, Reed's a likable guy over Belichick. Mahomes, I think, is much more likable than Brady. Yeah, people could be sick of the Kelce and Taylor Swift stuff. Hey, whatever. I don't care about that stuff.
That's not Taylor Swift's fault, by the way. It's the network that put her on. The girl's watching the freaking game.
She's there supporting her man.
You know, so you can't crush her for it, even though people are, I'm tired of Taylor Swift. Blame the network.
Yeah.
They don't have to put her on. All right. All right, G, let's go to game two.
All right, game two. San Francisco beats Detroit 34-31. Brock Purdy and the Niners rally from 17 down to beat Detroit. San Francisco down 24-7 at the half, score 17 in the third, 10 in the fourth, hold Detroit to only 7 points in the second half for the win. That's the basic sentence. Let's get it out of the way. Detroit had this game, in control of this game, throughout the entire first half, came out in the second half, and I don't know what the hell happened. Things just didn't break their way, maybe. A couple of bad calls. We're going to get to them. Big play, because we're going to talk about it. Big play at the end of the first half. Detroit is up 21-7. Chance to kick a field goal to go up three scores. Campbell opts to kick the field goal. Bagley hits the 21-yard field goal, and they go up 24-7. I had Detroit on the money line. I had Detroit with the points. I was feeling a little, honestly, overconfident in the pick, I have to tell you, because in my head, they've come out Detroit and done exactly what they should have done. They ran the ball down their throats. Williams scored on an end around. Montgomery scored. They ran Gibbs into the end zone in the first half. They put points up on this board, and honestly, I thought they had San Francisco completely off balance. Now that all changes in the second half, we'll get to it. Let's talk about the first half first. Thoughts, guys?
I think, you know, like you said, you know, Detroit had the game in hand. They scored 4 out of the 5 drives. San Fran only stopped them once. Detroit's defense did just enough. You know, they forced a 48-yard field goal, which was no good. And, you know, Moody you don't trust. You know, unlike the other game where you had Tucker and Butker, with Badgley and Moody, it's a far different thought process of kicking field goals there. But they did that. They got the interception. You know, they forced a punt. You know, the defense was playing well enough so that you felt like 24-7 should have been more than enough. Now, I know after the fact, you know, Campbell's getting some criticism. Well, he went for it all year. Maybe he should have gone for 4th and 3 there at the end of the half. But to me, you go up 3 scores.
You got to go up 3 scores, Kev.
Go up
24-7. On the road. On the road, you take the point. It's not even a joke. It's on the road. No matter where it is, it's a freaking point.
Forget about on the road. Take the points. I don't care if you're home. Take the points.
I get it. I agree with you all the way through, but on the road, to sit there and act like an idiot, and analytics, and I've been saying that this is going to catch up to him at some point, caught up to him in the biggest game of the year. The fact of the matter is that you can't trust the stupid analytics every single time, because you're a football man. You played this game. You know the value of points. You were a blocking tight end, for crying out loud. You understand the value of getting down there. I'm not saying Badgley's, and the fact that Badgley's not a lock is probably something to do with this, Kev. I'm not going to say it isn't, but these weren't 55 yarders, Kev.
Yeah,
they blew the game. They flat out blew the game. I don't even know what else to say. All right, it was just crazy.
So let's go ahead, second half.
We're going to get to it now. Stats. Just stats before we get to the second half. Purdy was 261 with a touchdown and interception. He ran 5 times for 48 yards. I felt like every time they needed a play with his feet, he got it. Every time he needed that 7 yards, he got it, right? McCaffrey had 2 scores. Mitchell had a running touchdown. Ayuk had a couple of big catches. We're going to get to him in a couple minutes.
You mentioned Purdy's numbers. I mean, more impressively, the second half, 13 of 16.
Yeah.
He was a touchdown. He was dynamite. And he had most of his rushing yards in the second half, scrambling, keeping drives alive.
This is the Detroit secondary, by the way. Okay, this is the secondary where Nick Mullins is throwing for 400 yards twice. They held Purdy in check as good as you're going to do in that situation. Anyway, go ahead.
All right, so here we go. We're going to go through the second half. So second half starts. San Francisco kicks a field goal. It's 24-10. You guys, tell me if you want to jump in at any point. We're going to start going through this.
I'm going to jump in right away. So, Kev.
Okay. So, Detroit is up 24-10 at that point. They go 8 plays, 47 yards. They got the ball on the San Francisco 28. On 4th and 2, they decide to go for it. Reynolds drops a pass.
Point of parliamentary procedure, my friend. Goff 0-for-8 on the day when pressured. He was pressured on that play. Now, Reynolds should have probably caught it. I'm not saying he shouldn't have. But you kick the field goal. Going up 3 scores in the third quarter. Little stat. Teams leading by 17 at the half in the championship game were 21-0 going into this game. 21-0. And everybody that wasn't a 49er fan was rooting for Detroit. Everybody. Detroit had 85% of the country on their side. And I mean, I'm being honest. And everybody's like, kick the field goal. Everybody's like, you got to take the points there.
And here we go. So at the end of the first half, he kicks the field goal to go up 3 scores. Here, inconsistency. Kev?
24-10. If you have a chance to match the field goal and go back up by 17, you've now taken, you know, half the third quarter away. Now you're down to only a quarter and a half left to still get 3 scores. If San Fran had come out and put together a drive and score a touchdown to make it 24-14, where a field goal only puts you up 13, maybe I can be talked into it. Maybe. I still prefer taking the points there.
Points.
Because it's still within 2 touchdowns.
I got you.
But when you have a chance to go back up 17, you've got to take the points there. I'm sorry.
Okay. Now the ensuing plays after this totally change how you think about the field goal, because now it's like, how did you not kick the field goal? And what happens is you get the biggest play of the game a couple plays later. It's a 51-yard pass from Purdy to Ayuk. It's deflected.
Which was not really, let's be honest. It hit Vindar in the helmet.
I'm getting there. It deflected off the defender's face mask. Ayuk makes a hell of a play from the ground. And the ball's now at the 4-yard line. Kev?
But if you notice, there's a yellow hanky coming from the referee.
There's
there
a flag.
Nobody talked about.
They picked it up. They said no foul. And they said no foul.
Well, after he caught it, it didn't matter at that point.
I don't think he interfered with him at all. I didn't think it was an interference at all, by the way. Did you?
I didn't think so.
I mean,
he was behind him by 3 yards. He just doesn't have a catch. It hit him in the face mask. You catches it and dives to the ground. I mean, so the biggest play of the game was pure luck. It should have fell incomplete.
Okay, I never heard that they waved off the penalty.
Yeah, they said there is no foul for.
Okay, I never heard that.
There is no penalty for pass interference. They picked it up. I guess they were going to call it on him, and then it didn't matter.
Your question about was there interference? I don't know, because every replay after that is showing the ball bouncing off his helmet into Ayuk, and not the preceding 7 seconds before that, when you would have saw if he actually had his hands all over him. So, you know, maybe. Okay, three plays later, Ayuk catches a TD pass. It is now 24-17. And then the kickoff happens. First play, Gibbs fumbles the ball. 2 minutes and 7 seconds later, McCaffrey runs one in, and it is all falling apart.
Gibbs apparently ran the wrong way. They kept saying it on the broadcast. Olsen said that, you know, Goff turned one way. Gibbs was going down the wrong side. He flipped it up, but Gibbs never had control of it. He got stripped, but he never really seemed to have control of the ball as he was going through there. But on the first play back, to fumble it right back, gave it right back to him, and put San Francisco in great shape to score.
And then Purdy with 21-yard scramble on that drive to give him the chance for McCaffrey to score the 1-yard touchdown. And to me, psychologically, you're looking at San Fran going before the end of the third quarter. We have now tied the game up. There's no way they're losing the game at that point.
24-24. Kickoff happens. Detroit gets the ball back. And here's where I thought, again, why going against what you've basically done? You don't wind up running the ball on two of the three. You got to run the ball on two of the three plays at least. Try to at least take some of the momentum away. But they run the ball. It's two incompletes. They knock out a minute and 1 second after that. It's three and out. And then San Francisco gets the ball back. It's an 11-play, 65-yard drive that takes up a couple of minutes. They wound up getting a field goal. And the 20-point run to take the lead is now complete. They now lead 27-24. And Detroit, I feel like, is shell-shocked at this point. I don't know what you guys thought at that point, but I just
felt
like...
They drove back down the field. They actually were. They took the ball and went down the field.
And here it comes. Then Detroit goes 6 plays for 45 yards. It's a 2-minute and 20-second possession. But it ends on a 4th and 3 incompletion.
Here's my point on this. The third down play, they hand the ball off to St. Brown. Why? Hand the ball to your back. Give it to Montgomery if you're going to go for a fourth down. Give it to Gibbs. I would go to Montgomery because he's the bull and let him just fall forward. And then if it's 4th and 1, maybe I think about it. But I actually don't, because I tie the game up because I have a brain in my freaking head. And you have to kick the field goal there. I mean, but if you're going to run the ball, at least give it to your running backs. You have two excellent running backs. Why is St. Brown getting this carry? I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand it. It just made no sense. Everything that they were doing, they were outthinking themselves. I know this offensive coordinator, everybody loves this Johnson kid. I don't like what he did at all on that down the stretch of that drive. And then on 4th down, he got pressured, and he was incomplete by a lot. Yeah. St. Brown had no chance of catching that ball.
Yep.
Goff is a pocket quarterback. You put him under pressure, he's Jim Everett.
And again, back to the same point about the field goal. You have a chance, Kev, to kick the three.
Tie the game.
Tie the game. Here we go. Here we go.
On the road.
On the road. Here we go. All right. 3:06 left. San Francisco scores another touchdown. They're now up 34-24.
Actually, a great run by McCaffrey, and he lands on his head. That was a very awkward landing on that. It was it was a little crazy.
Gets him out of the rest of the game.
I mean, Purdy had a big scramble, and then McCaffrey had that 25-yard run. He finished with 90, but really, Detroit's run defense was excellent in this game. They really held McCaffrey in check, I thought. But that run put him up to 90, but he got hurt pretty bad on that one. He asked out right away.
It was 20 for 90, but, you know, that 25 yards on the last drive was 19
for 65.
Going into that last run, you know, like you said, you hold them to about 3 yards of carry.
Detroit won both lines of scrimmage. They did what they had to do with that. You knew that their pass defense was suspect, but they won both lines of scrimmage. To be honest, the hardest guy to cover on that field seemed like it was Samuel to me, because every time he touched the ball, he just runs so damn hard. Kittle was invisible. Ayuk's biggest play was a fluke. That shouldn't have hit the guy in the helmet and fell. It should have been an incomplete pass, most likely. You know, McCaffrey's biggest play was the 25-yard run. I know he had a couple short touchdowns runs, but really outside of that, that was it. And or a short touchdown run. I don't think he had two. And then Purdy was excellent scrambling and hitting his receivers. And Deebo Samuel, whenever he touched the ball, was a threat. The first guy never brings the guy down. The first guy never has a chance of bringing him down.
Like you said, Darren, he's hurt too much. You know, sometimes because of his running style, because of his playing style, he gets hurt too much. But when he's healthy on the field, you know, I said it last week, it takes the San Fran's offense just up that other notch.
I mean, and again, there were invisible aspects of this offense this week, or not quite. I mean, Kittle was a non-factor in this game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, they still put up enough offense. So they go up 10. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I just wanted to bring up that the run by McCaffrey, because that was a nasty fall. We all saw it. He landed directly on his top of his head. I was like, oh, my God.
I'll give you the breakdown for the next 3 minutes, and then we'll go get into it a little bit. So Detroit gets the ball back with 3:02 left. They move the ball. They have a first and 10, San Francisco 24. They can do one thing. They don't. We'll come to that in a second. They elect to try to score the touchdown. They score, but they only left themselves a minute on the clock. They score, but it's too late. They can't get the ball back. It's a failed onside kick, which we know is not going to work. So at that point, first and 10, San Francisco 24, you got your timeouts. You need a field goal. Two timeouts, right, Kev?
Well, they used one on that drive.
Well, on the third down run.
Right. Okay.
So run it.
If you're going to go for a fourth down, and if you're going to go for the touchdown there, you've got to throw into the end zone on third down. Make sure you keep those three timeouts.
Kevin, to be honest with you, even if you run it and you get stopped, even though I wouldn't have done that, you don't call timeout anyway. You line up,
get the play
fourth down, or you kick the field goal and get your 3 points because you need two scores.
Yep. And
now, as a guy that bet San Francisco -7.5, I was ecstatic that they were going for it because it gave me my only chance of the cover. But they hit it. But you can't run the ball. Again, this guy Johnson's a genius. How are you running it on third down and then wasting your timeout? So now you have no choice but to do the onside kick. You took everything away with 1:05 left because you're a bonehead. And the eagerness to get this touchdown, I was stunned they didn't go for two, Gino. I thought they were going to sit there and say, let's go for the win. Let's go for two. And if we can recover the onside kick, we win it by a point. I swear to God, I thought that. I'm probably a minority in that, but I thought that for sure. I texted Kevin.
The analytics say, you know, going for two here increases our odds of winning by 2%.
It's so stupid. I'm just like, how do you run the ball on that drive? I mean, they got the touchdown, so they did what they had to do, but they gave themselves no chance in the game.
Darren, saying they did what they had to do doesn't clarify it, because by going down that route, you left yourself nothing. You left yourself with one option. It was try to recover an onside kick, which at this point, according to the stat, only 2% it's been. So that's what you leave yourself with?
You have to take the three timeouts with you no matter what.
Down 10, at what point do you take the field goal?
Listen, if I was in field goal range on the other side of the two-minute warning, I would have kicked.
Honestly,
but it wasn't quite there.
As fast as you could put the 3 points on the board to try to get the ball back, that's when you kick the field goal.
Once I'm inside 40, once I'm inside a 40-yard field goal, I'm kicking it.
Yep.
Or 40 and inside, I should say.
I was going to say, you got to be down around the 20-yard line, get you,
20, like, safely 20, within,
get you safely within the 40-yard field goal attempt.
Yeah, and 22-yard line, I'm kicking it. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. But the running play ended the game. And listen, you know, how can you do that? I mean, how do you not understand time management like this in the biggest game of the freaking year? Biggest game in the Lions' history. And let's be honest, right? Were any of you guys rooting for the Niners in this one?
No.
We all picked them. We all want to act like we're smart. We picked them.
They were rather chalky there.
We picked the Bengals too, Kev, you and I. Yeah. Well, that's how good we were. But I just couldn't believe it. It was the Detroit Lions blew this game. Way too aggressive in too many spots. Analytics, this should show you. Stop listening to the freaking analytics. Because that's what Dan Campbell did, and he blew it.
Darren, we've been saying certain things the entire season.
No doubt.
You want to know some of the things we've been saying the entire season?
Yep.
From the start to the end? How come none of these coaches have any kind of time clock management? That's one. Number two, the refereeing sucks. Number three, how can they keep going for it on fourth down? And the fourth is the biggest one. Take the points. And I feel like throughout the entire day, all of these points came up in two games.
The last 2 years, it's been much more of the fourth down playing and going for and fourth down. Before that, you know, it was always, you know, going for two too early in the game. Darren and I were always of the opinion, don't even think about it till the fourth quarter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Until you have to do it.
You don't chase points. Bill Parcells said it, and I agree. Yep. Don't chase points. You'll get your points when they come. And I understand the analytics and like I said, this is a sport of men. Get these freaking nerdy. They get the three of us out of it. Let the men play a physical game, hit each other, land on their heads, hurt each other, and make decisions based on brains and the momentum of the game, and not what a freaking geek in the back is telling you that the computer says you should be doing. Enough of the crap. Enough of it.
What's funny is you expect Mike McDaniel to be doing this more often than Dan Campbell.
Oh, absolutely you do.
Yeah, but
Mike McDaniel's team scores from 40 yards out. They don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
We knew going in, Campbell's been aggressive like this the whole year. No doubt. And Darren has been basically saying that at some point, this is going to bite him in the ass. At some point, it's going to bite him in the ass. At some point, we got through almost through the entire playoffs without saying it until this game. And here it's like, here's the only point for me, right? And that is, my only takeaway is, he obviously understands what he's doing, because at the end of the half, he did take the field goal to go up three scores. So he got it in his head that he had to be up three scores. And then after that, he abandoned that whole theory. It's out the window. I don't care what I've done.
I was as upset watching this game as if I was watching one of my teams play. I really was. I was just, I can't believe they're doing it. I just could not believe that they did everything in their power to lose this game. They were, I mean, listen, you look at the two teams that lost. Baltimore, I don't feel like showed up and played their game. They had no persona for that game. Kansas City's defense deserves some credit, but the fact is that I thought Baltimore's plan was awful. I thought that they did not show up and didn't try to be who they were. Detroit came out like wildfire and did everything they could to lose the game until they finally did it. I mean, San Francisco's too good. We were saying most of the year. At the end, some people might have said Baltimore, but San Francisco was the best team in the league almost all year to us, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, you had these guys on the ropes. They didn't have an answer. They couldn't find people open. They're settling for long field goals. It takes a fluke bomb that hits the face mask of Hildor and lands in Ayuk's hands for them to score their first touchdown. Well, I mean, the second touchdown. But, I mean, but to get them back in the game, it took a fluke.
The last time I was this upset about a second half that had nothing to do with my team was when – the Atlanta Falcons blew the Super Bowl to the Pats in the second half. Yeah. I swear to God, Jeff, that's the only thing that kept going through my mind is that, can we have a little clock management? Like, that was the one thing with Campbell. It's like, a little clock management. I mean, come on. I understand that the tides all of a sudden turned. It's a freak play, Darren. The bounce off the helmet. It's a freak play. I get it.
It's an incomplete.
At some point, you have to give your team the ability to overcome the momentum here. Because, and I actually texted you guys, the momentum just swung the other way.
You did.
In a game where each team only had one turnover.
Yeah.
So there's no problem there. Detroit punted twice. They should have scored on every other possession except for, let's go for it on fourth down too many times.
And by the way, Darren, we gave him props because he was pretty good most of the year. Reynolds was horrible in this game, man.
Had two drops. He had two drops.
And two big drops. I mean,
absolutely. Reynolds was not good. I thought that, you know, Montgomery started off like a house of fire. They stopped giving him the ball. I thought Gibbs didn't get enough carries, even though he fumbled one. There was a few things that I didn't love. St. Brown, they went to. They did utilize him as best that they could. Jameson Williams probably had his best game. He had the 42-yard, scamper. I had him for a touchdown plus 450. I was all excited. I thought that Greenwald was going to get him, and he got away from him. I was pumped. I was like, yeah, Jameson Williams. But so certain guys showed up. Williams showed up, and Reynolds did not.
All right. Anything else? So I will just tell you at this moment, San Francisco is a 2-point favorite against Kansas City. Over under at this moment is 47. If you like Kansas City on the money line, it's only plus 105. So they all think it's going to be really, really close.
Plus 180 I got for Kansas City on Sunday. I got plus 180. The Chiefs. Wow. Getting this plus 180. At Baltimore. Oh, yeah.
I'm talking about Super Bowl. Listen,
that's obscene, by the way. That Patrick Mahomes gets you a plus 180. And for the Lions, we both had plus – I had plus 215. I don't know if you were in the same boat as me. But I had plus 215. And I picked the 49ers, but I threw a few bucks on the Lions just because I thought it could happen.
Yeah, I mean, I had Kansas City-Detroit money line, and it was basically like plus 670 or something.
Yeah, I was in great shape with it. I felt awesome about it.
All right, so we'll get into Super Bowl previews and stuff next week. Any big thoughts about the Super Bowl at this moment, guys? Anything?
I haven't really dug into it much.
Okay, that's fine.
The fact of the matter is the two teams that played a few years back, the team wearing white has won 17 of the last 23 Super Bowls. 49ers will be in white. Okay. Last time a team in a colored jersey won it was the Chiefs over the 49ers 3 years ago. So we'll see what happens.
I will tell you at this moment, I think I will have a very difficult time not taking Pat Mahomes again. I'm just telling you right now.
I've been burned too many times.
It's hard to bet against him sometimes.
Yeah.
All right. We will move on to some baseball news. A couple of signings, a couple of things happening. Justin Turner signs with the Blue Jays for a one-year deal. Mariners make a trade and get Jorge Polanco for the Twins in a five-player trade. Hector Neris signs with the Cubs. Ottavino back to the Mets. David Robinson signs with Texas. More pitchers off the board, Kev. It's ridiculous. And then two other points for baseball.
Wandy Peralta goes to San Diego, by the way.
Yep. Right. Jimmy Williams dies at the age of 80 this week. And the Orioles and the Angelos family are selling the team to some private equity moguls. $1.725 billion.
Wow.
Any baseball thoughts, guys?
What are the Yankees worth if the Orioles are worth 1.7?
A lot.
Well, if George was owning them, it'd be worth a lot more. We'll put it that way.
A lot.
But now that I have to look at the Suns running this and I have to look at Hal, it's enough to kill me.
A lot of relievers off the board again. I'm not happy about this as a Yankee fan, and I know you're not happy about this as a Met fan, you know?
Well, you know, all you keep hearing is the Mets were looking into Turner. The Mets were looking into Peralta. Both of them gone now. You know, we were looking into Robertson. He's gone. You know, everybody, you know, the Mets looking into. Well, can you make a move?
Besides, the Mets need a designated hitter more than any team in baseball. Just give the Met fan a DH. Give him someone they can bank on. That's all they want.
Okay, Mr. Larry. I'm
excited to have Stanton. You know, the Yankees need another reliever. I don't know what we're doing. I know that people think that we're good. We're not good. Clay Holmes is not that good. I don't understand who's evaluating this team. Holmes.
Your buddy Brian Cashman.
Oh, my God. Cashman should have been gone 10 years ago.
Because we know how much you love Cashman.
He should have been gone 10 years ago. Listen, you're the Yankee GM, and you haven't won since 2009. How do you keep getting a pass?
Kev, let's move to some NBA. We got a surging team here in New York right now.
Knicks have won 8 in a row.
Woo!
And the last two, more impressively, Randall got injured, separated his shoulder. Depending on whether or not he needs surgery, we'll determine how long he's out. Right now they're taking it, you know, sort of week to week at this point. The last two games, OG was out, and Dante DiVincenzo stepped in there and scored about 60 points the last two games combined. Eight straight games, they have now moved up to the third place in the Eastern Conference. They're within a game and a half of Milwaukee. Just incredible what they've been doing. I mean, that trade just turned the season around so much.
And now Jalen Brunson looks like the best player on the court basically every night he's playing.
Yep.
It's really that impressive to watch. The other side in Brooklyn, real quick, So Ben Simmons comes back the other night. They score 147 points. Almost had a triple-double. Played 18 minutes. He's out tonight. Bruising knee. You can't make it up.
You
can't
Are you shocked? He
plays one game. Guy plays one game. Actually looks good on the court. Almost gets a triple-double in 18 minutes. He's two assists shy. Two assists shy. He had the rebounds and the points. He had 10, I think 10, 12, and 8. And then he doesn't play tonight. just quit. Just take your money and go. Go home. You don't want to play. My God. But the Knicks have been outstanding. They're just fun to watch. The Cavaliers are right on their heels. The Pacers are very good. The middle of that East right now is excellent with Philly, the Knicks, and the Pacers. It's really good. And the Cavs.
Cleveland's 9-1 in the last 10. So they've been playing really well. Out West, you know, you've got the Clippers. They're now 22-5 since December 2nd. They had a huge win Saturday night. They went into Boston and won 115-96. The game wasn't that close. They used a 21-0 third quarter run to go up by 33 and rested everybody in the fourth quarter. More impressive the fact that this was the second game of a back-to-back on the road. They went into Cleveland Monday, lost, but I think they come down from beating Boston the way they did. And for the Clippers fans, you know, they remember back in December, Boston did go into LA and win by 37. So the Clippers had revenge on their mind, but, you know, really stepped up their game. Boston bounced back after that loss with two straight wins. They're still 3.5 games clear of everybody else in the league for best record. Out West, you know, Phoenix is 8-2. Minnesota and Denver are both 7-3 in their last 10. Sacramento's getting hot. They've won 4 in a row. They're starting to
lost tonight. They just lost.
They just lost, of course.
They lost to Miami. But, you know, but they weren't playing well.
Well, Miami was due for a win. They lost 7 in a row. Exactly. The longest losing streak under Spoelstra. And Philly's lost 4 in a row now. And Embiid's questionable with his knee.
They already announced him not playing tomorrow night again. I think it's is it Utah tomorrow? I'm not sure.
Yeah, after leaving the game last night, you know, his knee's always been a concern. You know, the last couple of years, you know, they've been able to manage it for the most part, but you know, with Embiid, you know, and some of his, especially early in his career, his injury history, you know, you're worried about that knee there.
A couple of quick things, just points. Doncic puts up 73, and Booker puts up 62. And Reggie Miller comes out and says, wow, I miss when they played defense in the NBA.
Yeah. Doncic almost had a triple-double in that game, too. 73, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists while scoring 73.
And against the Hawks, who play great defense, but they give up 147, 143, something like that. It was like a game in the 140s.
But, you know, it's tied for the fourth highest in NBA history. Wilt, of course, is 100. Kobe is 81. Wilt, 78. Only the 15th 70-point game, but we've had 2 in a week and 4 in the last calendar year. So it's becoming less and less rare, like you said, Darren, because nobody plays defense in the NBA anymore.
Reggie Miller pointed that out. The other thing that I thought was an interesting stat I saw this week was the Lakers. They've attempted 234 more free throws than their opponents, the biggest disparity in the NBA.
Gee, I wonder why.
I just can't figure it out.
And they're still one game under.
And everybody went crazy about, they won the in-season tournament. The most useless tournament in sports history would be that stupid freaking tournament. But Doncic was great. You know,
yep.
He's a good player. He doesn't even look like he has the physique to be this great athlete. You know, he's strong, but he doesn't look like skin rail athlete. He's kind of thick, but he's good. West, within 2 games, Minnesota, Denver, OKC, and the Clippers. I mean, the West is wide open. The East is getting to be wide open. You know, I'm big spot. I'm waiting for Jaylen Brown to dribble it off his foot. So, you know, we can see what happens out in Boston. Let's see what goes on.
Your favorite Celtic.
Well, I like him a lot, actually. I really do. I just think he's a turnover waiting to happen in a big spot. I know your son disagrees with me. But you watch a big game, he commits 7 turnovers every time. You're like, what's he doing? Jaylen, just shoot the 3. Stop trying to dribble it down low.
All right. Any NHL points other than the Oilers who've won their 16th in a row?
The record 17, so they're almost there. And at the same time, Vancouver's been still playing great. They still lead by 12. The one thing, Vancouver just made a trade with my Flames. They just picked up Elias Lindholm. from the Flames for three players and two picks. So Kuzmenko, Brusewitz, and Johnny Germo, and two draft picks go to Calgary in exchange for Elias Lindholm. So Vancouver's going for it. Remember this, though, about Edmonton. Even though they're 12 points back, they have four games in hand on Vancouver. So they've only played 45 games despite this run. They have been lights out. Islanders have lost three in a row. Wah starting to, I guess he's going to start finding players that aren't giving 100% effort, and the league's going after them already. But I love it. He wants maximum effort. I love it. The Rangers have been slumping. The Devils are slumping. Hughes won't play in the All-Star game. The Devils need Hughes or they won't make the playoffs.
Yeah, three games tonight. This is Wednesday night. We're recording it. Then you've got the All-Star break, so a little chance to sit back. Rangers, like you said, still in first. Carolina, because of the Rangers slump, is crawled within 2 points in the division. Vancouver, Boston tie for the top spot with 71 points in overall in the NHL. And just going back to Edmonton for a minute, Connor McDavid, 20 goals, 47 assists, 67 points in 43 games. He had 10 points after 11. So he's got 57 points in 32 games. That's Wayne Gretzky type of pace.
Not quite, but it's getting there.
Let me tell you.
Getting there. Wow. Hockey's how the West was won is going to be interesting, by the way. Because Edmonton, like Skinner plays well, they're tough to beat.
And Vancouver still keeps them well behind them.
Still 4 points behind. They're still 4 points back.
Yeah.
They're 9-1 in their last 11. They're not really losing ground.
No.
They picked up 3 points on them in their last 11 games. And they won all 11. So that's where we are.
All right. College basketball, Darren. Tonight we turn the page on January. Oof, February. March, right around the corner. College hoops starting to heat up. Darren, what do you got?
No great team this year, but a bunch of very good ones. I'm going to let my friend Kevin start because they had the upset of the week last night. Kev, talk about your Gamecocks.
Back-to-back weeks of maybe the upset of the week. Last week they beat Kentucky on last Tuesday night at home. Come back with a nice, the trap game here. They took care of Missouri that they had to at home.
They struggled in that game.
They did.
It was a 1-point game in the second half. They pulled away.
You said before the game, Michi would score zero.
Yep.
And they would find a way to win. You'll take it. Because that was a trap game because it was Kentucky last week at Tennessee this week. Fifth ranked in the nation going into it. Tennessee's favored by 13.5. Again, Michi struggled. He had 3 points. But B.J. Mack, Tyron Cooper stepped up.
Tyron Cooper was so awful last year in Minnesota. I can't believe how well he's playing in South Carolina. He couldn't get water from a boat last year.
South Carolina was a team that was picked to finish dead last, 14th out of the 14 teams in the SEC. They are now 18-3, second place in the division, in the conference. And, it's the transfers that came in. We talk about it all the time in football. Maybe it's not so much in basketball, but the impact, like you said, Cooper, was at Morehead State, was at Minnesota, came in here. B.J. Mack was at USF and Wolford before coming in here. Stude came in from Vanderbilt. These three guys, plus Michi Johnson.
Who was at Ohio State before he came here, too.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Michi came in last year.
Because Michi's been here 2 years now. This is it. Now, this is a team that plays defense. They've one of the best defensive teams in the country. And scored just enough to win these games. And they're now 18-3 and looking, already last week or over the weekend had them up to about an 8 on the seeding line.
They'll be a 6 by the end of this week, I think. That kid, Stute, because he's long and can shoot, is a real difference maker. His length really means a lot. I'm not trying to take it away from Cooper or Mack and some of the other hard-nosed players. I like the way Stute plays. I like them at Vanderbilt. I think he just has that size to him. But what a win for South Carolina on the road. Tough place to play in Thompson Bowling, and they got it done. It was a week of upsets. Just a great week of college basketball. If you haven't followed it yet, get in, because this is as wide open a year as you're going to find. Last week, number 8 Auburn loses twice at Alabama, at Mississippi State. Number 10, Illinois loses at Northwestern, who, by the way, took Purdue to overtime tonight on the road. Did not win, but they took them to OT. Number 24, Colorado State lost twice. Then they bounced back and beat San Diego State at home. Number 9, Arizona lost to Oregon State, who was just awful, but they lost that game. TCU won at number 15, Baylor. Another, it was borderline right behind it because it was at Baylor. It was triple overtime.
That was
amazing game.
That was incredible to watch. I caught the overtimes in that game.
Oh, my God. Chuck O'Bannon, who's been buried to the bench, was hitting shots all over the place. It was an amazing game. Texas Tech, number 20, won at number 11, Oklahoma, and then they lost to TCU last night. Number 16, Dayton, who had been on a huge winning streak, lost to Richmond on the road. Now, Richmond's in first place in that league, 7-0. Dayton's down to 7-1. Number 19, Memphis, lost their third in a row at UAB. Not a great team. Tennessee loses at home to South Carolina, we talked about. TCU over Texas Tech, we mentioned. North Carolina, number 3, loses at Georgia Tech right after they lose, wins at, North Carolina loses at Georgia Tech right after Georgia Tech lost at Va Tech by 24. You can't even figure this out. It's nuts. And then, you know, Duke escaped. They got a foul call with 1.1 second left to get two foul shots to beat Clemson. America East, not that anybody really cares too much, but Vermont won at Lowell and Bryant to take the lead in that conference now. Providence has North Carolina on the ropes. That game's 36-34 right now. You know, and they won two in a row. St. John's beat Nova. And if there's a guy that's killed a program more than Kyle Neptune at Villanova, I don't know who he is, because this Villanova team went from Jay Wright to crap in about 3 seconds. The Hall lost a couple straight, and then they blew out DePaul last night. Well, UConn, Marquette, and Creighton all playing great. High Point, 18-4, 7-0. Not that anybody really cares about the Big South, but wow, they're off to a great start.
Yep.
The Big Ten, Maryland bounced back. Northwestern keeps winning. Minnesota bounced back. Nebraska and Iowa had a brutal week. Wisconsin, Illinois, and Purdue lead the way in that conference. Ivy, Cornell blows out previously one-loss Princeton. So now Cornell and Yale are on top of that league with Princeton in third. And every other team in that league, nobody has more than two conference wins. Missouri Valley, Indiana State was in trouble tonight. I don't know how they did. They were playing at Belmont tonight. Drake playing well. The Mountain West could have six teams in. Crazy. The Pac-12, 9 teams within 2 games, and they all suck. Arizona might be the only team that has anything to them. SEC is wide open. It looks like a 10-team field come from the SEC to me, Kev. Right now, when I look at it, I think 10 get in. I think the 10 get in from both Big 12 and SEC. That's how bad it looks right now. Southland, yeah, McNeese State, 19-2, 8-0. Sunbelt, App State, our team, 17-4, 8-1, with a win over Auburn, you know, on their ledger. They did lose to Northern Illinois and Asheville, though. And Grand Canyon, 19-2, 9-1. West Coast Conference, St. Mary's, Gonzaga, Santa Clara, and San Francisco. So there's such great hoops. Jay?
Indiana State did beat Belmont 78-72 tonight.
Came back on them. They were down 9.
And although St. John's did get that win, they did lose tonight to Xavier. So,
you know what? They were down double digits. They came back to tie it at 75. And then Xavier just made – it was one of those things. Xavier scores a bucket. St. John's misses a 3. Xavier comes down and got a shot block. It gets ends up in the corner. Guy hits a miracle 3 at the buzzer. It goes up by 5, and that was that. This weekend, just so everybody's aware, number 1 UConn visits St. John's. Number 2, Purdue visits number 6, Wisconsin. Okay. We have number 4, Houston visiting number 8, Kansas. Number 7, Duke visits number 3, North Carolina. Number 12, Iowa State visits number 18, Baylor. Number 5, Tennessee visits number 10, Kentucky. You have Texas visiting TCU. I know that these are teams that are well below South Carolina. Utah State visits San Diego State. Auburn visits Ole Miss, who's 18-3 as well. There's a lot of good basketball this weekend if you get a chance to watch it.
Yeah.
The college game is alive, well, and prospering. Caitlin Clark, they keep highlighting her. She apparently keeps scoring 40 a night or whatever. I love the people that tell me the women's game is better than the men's game. We don't have the parity yet. When they get the parity up there, then we can talk about it a little bit.
Good weekend for college basketball with no NFL this week.
Exactly. You got this lineup. I just gave you the top 25s. There are other great games. That's just the top 25.
Yeah, you had, about 6 or 7 matchups between top 25 teams?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I didn't even mention Texas, TCU, teams that are, like, borderline on it. There's a lot of good matchups this week. South Carolina's got a good matchup this week. They should win.
They're playing Georgia, at Georgia.
Yep, at Georgia. Not an easy place to play.
And Georgia beat us at home. Because that game, South Carolina decided not to hit foul shots.
Well, that was the reason. But Georgia's a very tough team to beat on the road.
Yeah.
So that's going to be challenging. There's a lot going on in the wonderful world of college hoops, boys. And that's all I got on the college hoop circuit.
All right. Anybody have anything else they want to bring up?
We're going to be getting into the horse racing, the Derby prep races. We had one last week. We had the LeConte where Track Phantom went wire to wire, his second win in the last like 2 months. We'll see if that means anything. It's really hard to get a feel for these horses at this point. Last year, I had a horse I loved, and he got scratched in the Derby. So I don't have anything yet. But over the next couple of weeks, we'll start seeing more and more of these races. And we'll get in. Anybody else have anything?
No.
All right. We're the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino, talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. Please, by all means, download the podcast anywhere you get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, or whatever you like. At the same point in time, we post a lot on social media. Please like and follow our page. We're looking to grow the followers. Please do so. And write back answers. I put up something tonight about who's the greatest coach of all time. I put up 9 different options. If you don't agree with my 9 to vote on, then by all means, throw in a 10th. But I think that we have enough between Lombardi and Chuck Knoll and Tom Landry and Don Shula and Joe Gibbs. And who else was on that list? Parcells and Belichick and Andy Reid. I think we had – and Bill Walsh. I think we had enough between those 9 for people to vote. And right now, Bill Walsh is getting the most votes that I've seen so far as the GOAT, not Mr. Belichick. But anyway, beside that, please like our stuff, share it, and follow us. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.